And those would be your obvious two. 3 points in TPR is enough to send me to the bank.
Right.
You have
especially with a 6.7 advantage early. That's a monstrous advantage early.
And you have two natural breaks there. You got a whole bunch of horses at 169 and 170, 169.5, 169.5, 170. Those horses are tied. You got a couple that are falling off the bottom, and then you have two that are standing up. Well, it just so happens by coincidence they finished first and second, but it doesn't always work out that way. But that's a very powerful, when you look for the natural breaks in your, boy, Spencer didn't leave his little laser beam here for me. Boy, that's too bad.
Yeah.
The natural break there is 170 to 172.5. You know, this is close to being a one-horse bet, and it certainly is going to be a, you know, a two- or three-horse box in an exacta, because you have two horses that are standing proud from the field. And this fills me with a lot of confidence. I can see how Capote's going to win. And is anyone surprised that he wired the field?
A couple of things to notice. If you look at your ones and twos and your rankings, number one, early pace, Capote, or whatever, Capote.
Capote, probably.
Number two, early pace, is the horse that collapsed badly last time, Stalboy. Our number one final fraction horse is Fappamoto, who, in my opinion, is going to be a long way back at the second call. That's his running style, and based on our figures, that's figures to be what's going to happen to him today. He might have an 87.5 for number one, but here's Navarone, who's much better early than he is, who has an 87.2. There's virtually no difference, who's our number two late horse. All right? Our number three early horse would be Keen, our horse that was just kind of average, who doesn't have much form. So if you take your top two early and your top two late and box them in an exacta, if you want to just do it that way, you're going to catch a lot of exactas, just a ton of them. Some days you'll catch almost everyone on the card. But this race was not to demonstrate really much of anything but a lot of track-to-track adjustments, and that you can use oddball pace lines and still come up with a reasonably good solution to your race. Why don't we go ahead and hit the F1 key so they can see some of the lineups.
Here's all the things you can do at this point in the program. Now, I'm going to enter a bogus horse here. And eight. And now when I hit F1, it's going to tell me about all the things that I can do. And I'll hit the F9 key. And now when I'll hit F1, for those of you who couldn't find that F4, how to calculate it, well, here it's all about. And it tells you how to go and find it.
There's a help screen for every position that the cursor is in this program. So
the help screen is very situational. In other words, if you hit F4 when you're entering the name of the horse, it's not going to tell you anything because that's not a viable key there. You have to be in this part of the program. So whenever you look at it and you're just lost, you say, what do I do next? F1 will answer all your questions. Okay. I don't even think we need to save this, do we?
No, I don't think so.
But I'll tell you what, just to do one more demo, I will put Sam in, and then I will scratch him, F6.
I got a question in the back here. What's that? What do you mean the sub-minimum? Well, of course it came up. And because he came down. His total pace was almost identical. And he was under less pressure. I mean, he really ran like a ball of fire up at Golden Gate under a very, very fast conditions. And
remember that those minimums are taken from past performance charts of actually run. These are taken from pace lines. This race hasn't been run yet. So the matchup says Capote doesn't need to use the six-point bulge that he has early. He's got a big, big bulge there. Well, 5 points. And so he can transfer some, probably not all, but some of that late.
And another thing to consider is, if a horse wins a race, do you know for an absolute fact that that was his best performance? You don't. I've lost more bets in my former life on horses that won races and came back and won again, improving their performance. He did as much as he had to win. A perfect example of this is AP Indy, who's turning out to be a pretty darn good horse, looks like. But this guy runs about as hard as he has to win. Well, that's true. Some horses just run away. We had a horse at Long Acres last week that won by 14 lengths. And now he was entered in Sunday's race, and he had a total pace number that was in the stratosphere. And our first thing was, well, we'll throw him out. Because he had run free and easy. He was stepping from 4,000 claiming to 10,000. That's like about a 10-level step. It's a huge step up there. If he didn't get the lead, he doesn't win. But he got on the lead, and he just ran tremendously, all by himself.
Can we have lights up?
One of the things that, and that's a good observation, that he was able to shift some of his energy to the confines of this racetrack. But if a horse has an excessive amount, especially early, and he won his race, we don't know if he can run an 85 yet, because he didn't have to last time, and he still won. First or second horse, and Capote won comfortably by 2.5 lengths. If you want to dazzle all your friends or whatever, you can say, yeah, this horse ought to win by 2.5, 3 lengths, easy. I love that.
He used to call me up in the middle of the night when he was developing this stuff. I called a horse at 2.7 lengths and it won by 2.6. Who is this? And after a while, I knew who it was, because the only man who's crazy enough to call me at 12 o'clock at night when he's watching the replays on TV and cheer. He doesn't cheer for the horse. He cheers for the margin of victory.
Right. I took a student to the track. I got to tell you a little quick story, because I'm really proud of this. It was a big turnaround. It was a terrible pace line I got this horse off of. But I took a student to the track. It was the last weekend of Santa Anita. And it was a terrible day because a lot of favorites are going to win. So he says, I've got this pick six ticket. What do you think of it? And I looked at it, and I scratched off four of the horses and put four other horses in. And I said, here, play this one. And I said, while you're at it, put one in for me. You know, because I got the rest. I thought, geez, we can win this thing. We had a couple things. Anyway, fourth race, it's a maiden claiming race. These horses are hopeless. They're terrible horses. They're not going to win much. And I took a mile pace line. This was a 6-furlong sprint. The horse had no speed that I could see on the visual, but when I ran the TPR, I realized he did have some speed. And I said, this horse is going to swallow this field. It's an easy race. I said, matter of fact, go bet this horse to win, you know, and I by himself. Don't bet him to place, just bet him to win. All right, so the race goes off. I've got a pretty good-sized bet on this guy, and he's running fourth at the second call. You've got to be second at the second call to win at Santa Anita. And I turn to my student, and I say, don't worry, this race is in the bag, and our horse is dropping back. I said, he's going to win by 5. Don't worry about a thing. And this guy's going nuts. We've got this horse single on pick 6, so we're going down the tubes on 2 tickets. Well, the reason I said that was the horses that had the lead have a very bad habit. They ran 93 earlies, which is great. They ran 72 lates at the 8th pole. They just stop. And this other guy just kind of cruised on by, and he only won by 4.5. And the student said, I'll never question your judgment again.
Oh, guru.
That is kind of fun, because when you have that kind of a feeling on the race, it's just tremendous. I mean, it gives you tremendous confidence. I mean, this is a betting game. That's why we're here. That's why you pay money to come to seminars to learn how to bet properly, I assume, because you don't want to go to the track and hand over your money like most people that go out there and they just give it to them. You know, I was sitting at the bar last night, and this bartender comes up and he tells this nice young couple, and they're probably newlyweds, you know, they're real young and they're in love and all this stuff. He says, I'll tell you what, I'll give you the drinks if you buy $20 worth of quarters to play the video poker machine. I thought, this guy's got a gun to their head. Come on! I'll give them the drinks, too, if they give me $20. You know. But anyway.
Those of you who heard me talk last night, like you didn't hear, you better have heard. We're asking, how do you know when to make a big bet and a little bet? How do you vary your bet size intelligently as opposed to, boy, I really like this race, I'm feeling good today? This is how. This is the kind of race. This is not a prime bet. This race we just looked at, that is not a prime bet. Three-point horses are not prime bets. This is a substantial bet, though. On my usual scale of $20 to $500, this is a $100 to $200 bet. And because these two horses are standing very proud from that field. And probably, I don't know what the odds were. I did not, was not there. Yeah, I probably split this evenly. Because those horses are pretty close. And I've got a real strong opinion in this race. This is the reason that I stay with Total Pace, because it enables me to make good betting decisions as opposed to good handicapping decisions. And there is definitely a difference. Okay, we're going to wind up here.
No, I just want to add one more thing. On the track-to-track adjustments, several people have asked me this, like the 6.5 downhill and some of the crazier distances around the country. One of the unique parts of Total Pace is that you can add adjustments together in a string. For instance, we're going to use a 6.5 furlong pace line, and today's distance is 8.5 furlongs on the dirt at Hollywood Park, because that's all we've got. So what we do is we take the difference between 6.5 furlongs on the turf at Santa Anita and 6.5 furlongs on the dirt at Hollywood Park. And whatever that distance is, or whatever that distance difference is, which is a -8, I believe. And then we take our sprint to route, which would be an additional -5. So this horse would get a -13, and you're going to wind up with a very skewed early pace final fraction relationship because of the different running styles of the courses. But your total pace will be remarkably pretty accurate. And so don't be afraid. I mean, if you're confronted with a situation that you can't comprehend, that's how you do it. That's how you do it. In other words, you take likes, sprints, whatever is close, whatever the difference is, and then take the sprint to the route. I hit a very nice trifecta by using a 9-furlong turf pace line coming down the hill. Now, that was a complete reversal. But the horse had a very good early pace rating and a very paceless field. And I was embarrassed because I only played this horse to place, and he almost won. His early pace rating almost stood up. So you can use the same thinking. In other words, you can adjust different distances and in combination going from one group in sprints to a route and turf and whatever, because you can... You're not always going to have the information that you need, but you can always use the information that you've got to make some sort of intelligent decision, if it's only that I don't really know. You know, I'm not sure about this at all. Does anybody have any questions about what I just said?
Yeah, any questions at all? We got about another 10 minutes or
so. We got some more time.
I'm going to break and have some dinner.
Heavy-weighted horses win a lot of races. That's why they get the extra weight. And I don't really consider weight, to be honest with you. I assume that in a mile-and-a-half race, weight perhaps does have some influence. I don't know how to do that, so I just try to do the best I can.
There's a lot of things we don't consider jockey, we don't consider trainer, we don't consider weight, we don't consider hoof configuration. If you want to do all that stuff, no one is going to stop you. But on the other hand, you paid a lot of money to come here, and you've paid money for programs and books and all this to learn the Sarton methodology. In 15 years, we've discovered that weight just doesn't cut it. And so, it's kind of pointless. Every once in a while, someone will come up and say, well, I like pieces of what you have here. I'm going to incorporate it into what I do. And I say, good. come to my track, please, because we need the mutuals up. If you want to do that kind of, it's like jockeys. Everyone knows that a good jockey will improve a horse, but generally it's already discounted information because they're so overbet that the jockey who moves a horse up 2% brings 10 or 15 or 20% more action on that horse. And so it's really a negative situation. So by ignoring jockeys, ignoring trainers, ignoring weight, we have found success. And remember, it takes more than just picking winners. You have to pick that nobody else picks. By definition, whatever the crowd does at a track is wrong.
One thing, I can make a quick comment about weight, because I just thought of a particular scenario when I would consider, is when a horse, for instance, and this is very true in stakes races, when a horse starts getting a lot of weight put on him, and there's been another horse that's been running very close to him, and they were perhaps at equal weights, and one goes up and the other goes down, I'm going to look real solidly at the second horse, because first of all, he's going to be a bigger prize. And I think that's a time when perhaps weight does have some sort of influence. But I don't know what it is. I really have never, and believe it or not, about 8 years ago, I did a very extensive study on weight and all this stuff, and I wound up almost tearing my hair out and not coming to any conclusion. So there were several other hands.
Yeah.
Okay, what Howard said this morning is pretty much the way I approach it. If you really need to use that off-track line, because that's most representative, as long as the variant isn't too skewed, you're probably going to be okay, unless the horse has run divergently different than it does normally. In other words, if he takes the lead and goes wire to wire and he's never been wire to wire before, maybe just broke cleanly on the sloppy track and went away with it.
Remember, so, you're not... okay, come on now, hold it down. I'm talking. You're not going to base your whole decision here on one race. Unless this horse only has one pace line, you're going to put two or three or four. See what the off-track did to him. See how he does when it's fast. If it moved him up, well, you probably don't want to use it. If it moved him down, you probably don't want to use it. But at least look at it and see if he's still in form, still in shape. But don't get out of the idea that you're locked into just one pace line. And we are using a surface variant. We're using the daily variant. So that takes a lot of the sting out of the muddy and heavy tracks that you get on the East Coast when things get really slow. That helps. But when you're looking at 40 variants, you probably ought to pick another line.
But sometimes you're forced to use them, and my own experience is they still work. They still work. And modeling will tell you when you're onto something or not. Just a normal track-to-track adjustment, whatever it is. Oh, you mean that he prefers one track to another? One of the things that I've really become aware of, and I think Dick has too, is that horses that have won at today's exact distance, today's exact racetrack, and today's exact class level are really tough to beat if they're in form. So if a horse prefers, the question basically was, what if a horse changes tracks a lot and he runs real well at, say, Laurel, and he runs crummy every place else? I would go back, if he's at Laurel today, I go back and get the Laurel line if I can make a case for his form. And that's a situational call. I wouldn't take that as a rule, and I would really evaluate where I think he is in his form cycle. But some horses do improve dramatically from one surface to the next.
I'm real hesitant about that. I agree with Tom that if they've done it before, they're likely to do it again. But don't get into this really forgiving, I'll go back and get a line for the horse.
One way you can bridge that gap is by checking what they did before they moved into this track the time before, which I always do, and then what they did last time. If the pattern's the same, I go get the line. If the pattern, is really skewed, forget it. There's something wrong with him. Yes? I recommend using APV in class. I don't do it just because of time constraints. Very effective. It really is.
And if you notice the way we're doing it, we're not really getting contenders. We're rating the last line on every horse, and then maybe five or six others. There's no interrelationship. Remember how Howard scratched a horse and it screwed everything else up in the program? You can scratch eight horses out of this one. You won't change anybody. Until your eye gets to the point that you can look down, Tom can do it, I can sort of do it, and say that a horse like Stavoy, the one horse here, you don't really need to rate that horse. Not if you're going to insist on that top line. But what was the horse? Didn't we have one that kind of snuck up on it? A Keen Line. That's a really bad-looking race, and yet he had a fair line. Now, in this particular field, it certainly wasn't good enough, but they will kind of sneak up on you, and it's a good idea. But one of the to rate every horse's last line as a minimum, because we have found that one of the real strengths of Total Pace is that it will uncover horses that will win or hit the board that the public misses, because there's a lot of beaten lengths involved. And Tom has, we've done two seminars in the last month where we handicapped a card up in front of God and everybody before the races were run. And both times, Tom has dug this weird horse out. The better of the two was beaten by 14 lengths. The other one was in triple digits or something. I forget what.
39 and a quarter.
Yeah, 39 lengths. He used that line, and he got the horse, and the damn horse won.
And I called him the pace horse.
Yeah.
Yeah, you laugh.
And keyed a huge double and exact, $175 exactas, and everyone danced around and, gathered at his feet and kissed them and, stuff like that.
That's why I'm here. I really like that. And the more I do it, the more I like it.
Yeah.
Because I can see that. I could just see that the horse had worked faster than he had been running. And surprisingly, his total pace rating off that top line was only 3 points deficient to the best of the field.
Yeah. And so
that's really great.
He calls these things. I don't dig them out quite as well as he does, but it's a real good thing. And when you're... Nobody uses all the tools that the methodology has to provide. APV, class, phase one, thoroughmate. If you did everything, pluses and minuses on the racing form, and circle the 80 speed ratings, and do all this kind of stuff, you could work 2-3 hours on a race, and really not develop any clarity on it. I'm being bombarded by baby spiders here. So we have picked a subset of...
He's really nuts, my friend. Here.
Yeah. We have picked...
There aren't any spiders up here.
The spiders coming in the end. There really are. I'm going to put one on your neck in a minute. They're coming out of this light right here. The people in the front row could see them. Shut up. Pick a subset of the tools that work for you. And if you really like APV, please don't think... Listen, if we got every teaching member in the methodology plus everyone who ever wrote a book on handicapping up here in the front of the room, and they all told you that APV is bad, it's horrible, and it doesn't work, and you're winning 70% using APV, who's right? You are. It may be lousy for everyone else in the world, but you're making it work. So never trust experts, because we're wrong as much as we're right, and we lie.
And the reason we got to be experts is because we didn't believe the other experts before us, quite
trust
frankly.
Trust your records. That's how we got to be experts, because every expert who's looked at this has said, eh. And we get decent reviews, but they don't really consider this serious handicapping. This is child's play. This is something for the weekend warriors. And yet, I prefer it over every other program extant, both within and without the methodology. And I have copies of practically all of them.
I cashed my largest bet, I made an $8 bet and cashed an $8,900 ticket on the strength of APV, so I would encourage you to use it. This gentleman's been waiting patiently.
You have like the 39 beaten lengths or 24
Well, I don't give horses credit for anything. They either perform or they don't perform. Because this is basically a 1 plus 1 equals 2 program with no automatic anything, I used the 39 and a quarter lengths. Because it was close, it gave me permission to go back and check his prior two lines, which were excellent. His early was a little bit better, his final, and his slate was a little bit better. And then he became number one or two. The point was that he had a distinct class advantage, is why I picked him, like about 10 levels. Yes?
This is a good bet, but not prime. One of the reasons it's not prime is because of Fappamoto. That's not a clear pace line selection to me. I can make a case for this horse. If Fappamoto had won, I would not have been amazed. Disappointed, but not amazed.
See, Fappamoto was a throwout for me because I know more about the horse than Dick does. But I mean, I've been.
But just on the note, I'm just talking about numbers here because I'll tell you, I don't remember most horses from race to race. And most of the time, I think that's an advantage. I don't have a minimum. Sometimes 3 points is enough. Other times, 9 points is not enough. Because we did have exactly that situation up in Seattle, and we both looked at each other and said, nah. And there was an 8 or 9 point horse. What you have to do is have it a clean, sharp, precise race. Everything right. I mean, like Capote. There's no question about this. Okay, the horse comes back from a little layoff. He runs a kind of a porky race, and he takes. Then he comes back and he runs great. Well, there's no reason to think that. Okay, he had his public workout. Now they turn him loose. He should win again. That's not. There's no controversy here. This horse is you know, and the same thing with most of the others. Stavoloy, the first horse. That top line is so bad that I consider that a clean call. The only horse in here that really bothers me a little bit is Fappamoto. And when Tom was going by it, I this is the first time I've seen this race, too. I typed in the first one. I said, hey, that second line looks pretty damn good. And I looked at it, and that would bother me enough. Though I probably would have taken the top line, that line would bother me enough that I wouldn't be as pleased. So that's what makes it a prime and non-prime, is how clean the race is, how it sets up. And how many of these kind of dubious calls have you had to make? And I don't really keep track of them, but you just get a feeling when you're done with a handicapping and you say, yes, this race. And also, you got to look up at the board. 3-1 is, I mean, you know, Capote at 8-5, I'm starting to think, well, he could bounce. At 3-1, I don't care if he bounces. I'm going to win more than I'm going to lose.
Any other questions? Yes, ma'am. Oh, I just put that in there because that's what I based my betting decision off of. Oh, in the comments column is where she's referring to. The first number is the balance of the horse. 3.3 means he's 3.3 points over from greater early than late. A minus 0.7 is minus, he's a little bit more sustained. And the 17 is the daily variant for that day that I calculated. What I'm looking for. Like, you see how on 5.10, it went from a 13 variant on 5.9 to a 20 variant on 5.10. So if I confront horses coming from that race, or races, on 5.10, they have a very high variant. I double-check myself with other pace lines to make sure that is not because there was only one race and they were slow horses, as opposed to this actual surface speed. Yeah, I just do it... when I drink my coffee in the morning. It's about the first thing I do after I read the front page of the paper is I just do this and write it down. It's really invaluable. And no, I don't care about the total. I used to keep the total, but I happen to know that 85 and 85 equals 170, and that's my minimum. and I'm looking more for the relationship between them. And I can pretty much add these in my head.
Yeah,
I've done
there really
lot
isn't a minimum total. There's no such thing as having too much or too little.
Yeah.
You just have the best. It's not a it's not that kind of number.
And I add real well in my head, so I can go down and probably give you what they are. But if you want to keep a total, that's a very good idea. If you're unfamiliar with it, yes. That's a class of the race based on a $10,000 claimer being 100. The first race was a 101, which was probably a 12.5
claim.
Clearing
class numbers.
Yeah, they're clearing class.
Okay,
numbers.
We need to break because we're going to be back at 7. Those of you
tonight, we'll condense some of the things that we had planned, but still cover everything. The first presentation will be from Bruce Jorgensen on deceleration pars and the amazing study he made and the results thereof from Yakima Meadows and Long Acres. I know a lot of people who say, well, I don't play Yakima Meadows or Long Acres or whatever. What we have to get used to, folks, is that all tracks are the same. You don't have to have somebody show you something about your track in order to learn how to use the tools to win at any track. And for those of you who say, well, I play these cheap tracks and think that's a negative, I want to tell you something. The cheap tracks, the ones where you had those $1,500 claimers and $2,500 claimers, and the ones that you had that inferiority complex about, those are where you make the most money. 5-year-old maidens, you got the Alpo Stakes at Blue Ribbon Downs in Oklahoma. The when a $1,500 horse runs against a $15 horse, it looks exactly like Secretariat running against Dr. Fager, believe me. Can you really look at a horse and tell him whether he's a $100 million horse or a $2,000 horse? I can't. They all look the same to me. And don't get too close to them. They'll bite you and kick you. Following the presentation on the deceleration pars by Bruce, we're going to cover a couple of things you've asked for. First, we're going to cover the tandem race, Jimmy and I. And we'll do it quickly because Jimmy and I talk fast, talk funny and fast. And then we're going to talk about how to get the place horse. Jimmy will sit down during that session. As you all know, he played the Exacta today in the Belmont Stakes, and he got him 1-3. We're going to, Jimmy is a Cherokee, you know, and he's petitioned for a casino in Oklahoma where they allow horse racing. And I'm going to go in with him because I was related to Pocahontas distantly. So us Indians, we're going to open one, and we're going to have a special bet. It's going to be called a Hattonella. And if you can pick them 1-3, you get a payoff. Now, and you're all invited to come. After we cover the tandem and how to get the place horse, I'm going to reveal to you, for the very first time, folks, how to use the 3-adjustment in energy thermation programs. A lot of you have asked, how do we use that 3-adjustment? And we're going to reveal it for the first time tonight. And we're going to put a big skull and crossbones up here to warn you that if you don't do it correctly and if you try to abuse it, you're going to be back to page 1 again. Right. Give me your old colonel talk from like when you were getting him to go to war in Korea.
Bruce Jorgensen! Yay!
Howard told me I have 40 minutes. And then the hook comes, and I'm supposed to cover DC pars and also show my race for how I handicap. So we're going to move right along here. What we're going to do on DC pars, I'll talk a little bit about my model and how I got my model, and we'll review the model I have here for Yakima, which is in the book, and we'll do one of the races against the model, play the model against one. And then we'll do a cute little thing like Sam Wada there has been working on how to do some math within your horses after you've ran them on DC pars and come up with the winner. And that will not be a complete explanation. But if you do a little bit of study of what I've done, look at these races, play with it kind of the same way, you'll get the idea and you can soon model for your own track. And then we'll take a look at the race that I have for my race to show how I handicap. It'll be on Thermation. So, let's take a look at my model. And you know, this is just absolutely dynamite, people. If you like the model, this will just do you. Well, it's page 151. Now, how I do my model, my model has been created by myself taking the pace line I used for the horse, and that won the race, and then taking the figures from my DC power readout from that horse, and I put them in a database. I put them in a database so I can shuffle out, so that I can keep a model for routes, so I can keep a model for sprints, so I can make it for the males at the sprints if I want. So I can shuffle down to models. And I'll start at the season. When I don't have many races, I'll only break out. I'll have routes and sprints, period. And I won't break up the girls and the guys, or the 3 or the 4-year-olds, because I don't have enough races. When I get more races, then I'll break them up to the 4-year-old guys and the 4-year-old girls and so on. I will expand and get more models as I have more races in my database. Strange thing that I'm finding. I'm finding as the track changes bias, I'm getting very little change, if any change, in my DC power model. Strange. And I don't know if that's right or wrong, but that's what a way it's kind of working for me. So, and when you do your model and you do your printout, you've got to use your head. It's just not automatic. You got to sit there and look and say, hey, which is my high and which is my low in these different numbers? Throw out your aberrants. And say, maybe there's some ifs and maybes. Maybe there's some other little ways that I can model this to come up with my profile. So take a look at page 151. And I have printed two of my models from Yakima. This is Yakima. The races we're going to play, what are in the book, there are 4 races in the book from Yakima, which these models are applicable to. It's from the last day that I went to Yakima while it was open. I played 7 races that day. I won 7 out of 7, and most of them you can take down to 1-horse bets with this model and what Sam's doing. All of them you can take down to 2 horses, and in particular if you use Thermation. Hey, it was an easy 7 for 7 when you got something like this, guys. Anybody that's using the methodology, doing your work, and not crying, just working. And if you're not winning, or there's something wrong, you just better do a little more work, because it is there. It's flat there, people. All you got to do is do it. Let's take a quick look at these models. Now, the first model, take a look at the routes at the top of the page. Now, you can see this is Yakima route profile for males. I don't even bother to break it up between 8 and 8.5, because I get the same numbers. Okay? Now, next you see type. Type is the running style of the horse as he comes out of the engine. That's not my eyeball of the horse. If you eyeballed Yakima on the routes, you would say every single race is early, if you eyeballed it. The engine says they're all sustained horses on the males, on the sprints. The next numbers going across the top is DTE, and you'll see a printout of DC pars, and I'll tell you what these factors are. The DTE, I just wanted that in there to keep track of my DTE to see if it had any bearing. DTE, and the DTE number becomes a function of the race. Those numbers are against the dream pace, and that number is generated by how the horses interact with each other. Those are not really a modelable number. The next two, the TDP, and where it says par no, which is par median numbers, those are modelable, and those are a static number that horse will generate always. You know, just like he's got fixed so many feet per second out of a line, those numbers are static numbers from that horse, from that running line. Now, on the routes, if you'll notice, under type, I have a mix of early horses and sustained presser horses. And so I said, okay, I want to know what my model is for my early horses, what an early horse has to have, and I want to know what my model for a sustained horse has to have. And so, they're in the caps, the type is a mix of ease and sustained pressers or pressers. Now, for the early horses, going to that little short left column under E-type, my par median numbers, and I've done this by looking at the numbers under the par median column, which is the far right column that starts with the 895, the far right column. I've taken my early horses and I found the range of my par median. My range of my par median is from 886 to 907. In other words, an early horse at Yakima, I want him to fall between those numbers for him to match my profile. Everybody with where I am? We'd only got 40 minutes for me to cover a lot of ground, folks. So, if you know, talk to me afterwards or read this, play with these races afterwards. Under TDP, still with the E-type, I've gone to the TDP column, which is entitled TDPNO, that's TDP number, and I've searched out the range of my early type horses, and they fall between 865 and 905. On my TDP number. Going over to the right column for the sustained type horses, I've done the same thing for my sustained horses to get my range of my par median and my TDP. This is just simple little bit of spade work and math work that you can do with your own profile once you've got some numbers in it. Okay, we're going to step down to the lower one. Now this is my male Yakima sprint profile. Don't have to break it up between 6 and 6.5. Get the same figures. I'm getting the same figures at Yakima for six, or at Longacres for 6 and 6.5. Find it very interesting. Okay, again I've kept the same columns because these are the things I've modeled. Now note, under type, all of the horses are sustained or sustained pressers. All of them. There's only one there that's early, the first one. After that, they're all sustained or sustained pressers, so I'm going to expect my horse to be a sustained or sustained presser if it's a male sprint, period. Now, again, my DTE and my DTENO, they're there just for my, they're not really all that modelable, but they're there for me to see about them. But I want you to note one thing. Under the DTE column, note how many ones and twos I have in the DTE column. Now that's ranking those horses. The biggest number is best. I've ranked all of the horses and how they, if they were first, second, or third, their number in the DTE. And the I got a lot of ones and twos. And I've taken note of that. So I start doing my par medians. I want to get my profile for my par median, which is a far right number. And by my looking at that list of numbers, I determined that 915 to 937 is the range that I want par median to fall in for these males. Now under that you will see two short phrases that are in parentheses. The first one says 906 to 914 is marginal and must be in the top two DTE. Well, I found there are a couple horses over here in my par median numbers that were outside of the 915. They were lower in 915. But in all cases, those horses happened to be one of the top two DTE numbers. So I said, hey, I can go outside of my range just a little bit if he's one of my top two DTE numbers. I've always got five horses in the race. Question, maybe I'll move fast on this. I have no time. I've got artillery ears so bad I can't possibly hear what you're saying. Howard went through that yesterday, of what all of these different factors meant. And you'll find them in the follow-up, and I think you'll find them in this book when you read the book later, exactly what the abbreviations stand for. TDP, I have found, by going through the TDPNO column, that my par range is 915 to 935. Again, I can go a little bit outside that range if the horse is in my top two DTEs. Now, this is a very quick and dirty explanation of what these two profiles are against my profile. There are four races in here. They follow right behind this, and we're going to do one of them. We will do the sprint race. The fourth race is on page 155. Now, keep a finger back here where the